I think the other thing that's been quite important for us, although we were not we're not funded and expected particularly to be promoting screening and doing anything about cancer screening in, from public health and the local authorities, we had felt so concerned about bowel cancer and the fact that in Tower Hamlets and East London in particular, we have, although we have similar incidence to other parts of the country, in fact, the incidence, you know, the number of people who get it is quite low, relatively low. We're a young population. People who get bowel cancer have very poor survival, and this is because it is diagnosed late. And a key factor did seem to be that we have really low uptake of screening. So in other places, people are getting screened and their cancers are getting picked up way before symptoms. And obviously their survival is better. So you could just say that's an artifact of, you know, sort of lead-in time. But nevertheless, it just seemed huge inequality that we had less than, you know, 35% of people in Tower Hamlets taking up bowel screening, 60% in the rest of the country. And we also knew that some of our problem relates to the particular population. So the research shows that Muslim groups in particular are very averse to handling faeces and having to do the FOBT test. But we also knew that there was a really big problem with lack of awareness. So that's what this report showed us, that people simply didn't know there was a service for bowel screening. And when the kit came through the post with an invitation, particularly if it was written in English, and it's quite complicated, and the test is complicated in terms of needing to do it three times, take two different samples, have to do it within a time frame, you have to write the date on three different times, send it back. It's, you know, it's not, although it's nice because it's at home and you're not having to be examined by anybody and it's very private, there's some technical issues that could put people off. And we also felt there was health literacy issues in that people understanding that this was, I mentioned before, an opportunity, and that we weren't looking for people with symptoms or who were at risk of bowel cancer. This was an opportunity for anybody to check out their health and survive what could be a devastating disease and is actually much more common than people think. So we've been working with our GPs in Tower Hamlets to, we're giving them some extra money, which funds them to phone people at home when around the time they're going to get their invitation for bowel screening. We only know that when they're 60. We don't know when they're going to get an invitation after that. And then they also phone people at any age between 60 and 75, who's, when they get a result back that somebody hasn't done the screening test. So they're phoning and talking to people in their own language with a script to explain the test and to explain the importance of it and to answer questions. And we've given them a list of likely questions and the sorts of very standard answers that can reassure. So it's not about coercion, it's absolutely about information. And we know from a separate piece of research we did in 2012, which has just been published, that we can get about 10% higher uptake where we do that compared to practices where it's just usual service. People just get the kit through the post. So it was quite important informing us still that although some people said they were embarrassed or they were worried about concerns about hygiene, you know, that was still only about 12% of people. Or, you know, but it's a very small amount, whereas the biggest number, it was still about information and really knowing what's all this about.
And I think one of the things that's really interesting about the screening programme was getting the two organisations to work together. So why did you require that?
Okay. We started off with a specification. And there were particular outcomes we wanted from this research. And we put it out, and we had several applications back. We went through a tender process. We had a pot of money. And the two best applications we had back, one was from Women's Health and Family Services, which had a fantastic track record and a very good application because of their engagement with the community, of being able to recruit volunteers from the community, support, train them, support them, and use them in the community. They, however, looked as if they were going to use quite traditional methods of surveys and focus groups. We then also had this excellent application from Short Work, who were experts in participatory appraisal, and we have used them in public health for a number of different projects. And we really like the model of participatory appraisal, but Short Work have no capacity, and it's not their particular model, to go out and recruit the volunteers themselves. So we brought these two organisations together and asked them to work together, one providing the expertise and the training, and the other one recruiting and supporting the workforce, the community researchers. There was initial concern, I think particularly by Women's Health and Family Services, who said, well, we have a long history of doing sort of community research, and that's what we do. What's wrong with our method? Anyway, we must have convinced them enough to say, actually, we're going to give your organisation a whole set of new skills. And it was great. It worked. They worked really well together. I think particularly the personnel on both sides, the sort of project leads, it worked really well for the volunteers. So it did put a good capacity into that organisation. It gave Short Work, another set of piece of work that they'd done, a new experience in a new field. We were very pleased as commissioners with what we got, and we felt we had added to community resource.
Brilliant. And why did you choose, what is it about participatory appraisal that makes it this preferred technique?
Okay, well, I personally had experience going back in some years because I've worked in Camden, where through the Sure Start programme, where I was a programme manager, we had already introduced it. I hadn't brought it in, a colleague had brought it in, and I'd come across it. And what I really liked about it was incredibly accessible by people who won't normally respond to traditional methods of research. So, and traditional, I'm talking about interviews, surveys, even focus groups, things where you have to get someone to come along, or where you have to get somebody to answer questions in a formal way, certainly where you have to get someone to read something. What this seemed to be when I saw it in action is, first of all, you went to where the people were, so that's a huge plus. Secondly, it's fun. So the people who you're asking to participate, they can get a lot of enjoyment out of showing what they think and feel, and it might make them think about things they hadn't thought about. And I think thirdly, it's absolutely anonymous, because people put a sticker on or they draw something, but there's no record left that this person or that person made that comment. So the researchers can look and they can see maybe how many were men or women or which particular venue that information came from. And often, that's good enough. You get themes out of it and you might want to go and pick those up. And I felt it, so suited a community where you've got people who've got low levels of English, written and spoken English, low levels of health literacy, low levels of time to stop and commit. So it's not that they don't care, but people have very busy lives, a lot of other priorities. They've often got children around their feet, they've got older people they're caring for, and they don't have a lot of time in the day to give up. And the people who do have that time often are what we might call the health-conscious realists, the people who are going to make those changes and do the things you want them to do.